Dr. Bob Rich, welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure and honor to be here.
You are going to be the professional grandfather. You have retired at least five times. We will cover a few of those professions. You are a writer, an author, a storyteller, and also an editor. And today we're here to focus on your book, The Hole in Your Life, how the book came about.
Okay, my 18th book, which has won an award, is on depression. And the 19th book came about because my wonderful publisher said a self-help book should only be up to 50,000 words. So I cut what I had in half, and the second half is all stories and essays that goes with the first. And the next logical thing was to write about grief. And so I started and hit a difficulty, but and also writing fiction is the chocolate icing on the cake of life. So I went on to working on fiction. And then my daughter was diagnosed with inoperable cancer. And so I got out my partly completed manuscript. And as part of advanced grieving, I started rewriting it. And by the time she passed, nearly a year ago, in December 24, basically I'd done my grieving and I was okay. And part of what helps one to heal is to pay it forward. So, for example, I had a client who was a pituitary tumor survivor, and it's a very high-risk thing operating there. So after she came good, she formed an online community for people suffering from pituitary tumors and survivors of the operation. For some reason, she didn't include people who died of the operation. Sorry, I can't help it. It's my sense of humor. So that's what I'm doing with this book. Now, this will probably be in mirror image, but we can read like that. So I want to be instrumental in relieving the suffering of as many people as I can by sharing how to deal with grief. And
Read.
it's already won an award and came finalist in a contest. And that shows that the contest judgment has very poor judgments, otherwise it would have won.
Oh no, it is wonderful content. Grief happens to be one of the top three topics that I have interviewed on in the last 15 years. It is part of the human living experience. How do you define grief?
Well, grief is the reaction to any loss. If you and I have a game of chess and you beat me, I might feel a 10-second thing, oh, you know, but it's okay. What can I learn from the game? And at the other extreme is bereavement, which is grief for a person who has died. But for argument's sake, in today's conditions, losing your home because you can't afford the mortgage, having your job disappear, having your neighbor kidnapped by government agents. Sorry, that's political, I know, but I feel very
No, but
strongly about
it
these things.
happens. It is real out there.
Yeah. Car smash, you suffering a stroke or your beloved person suffering a stroke. All of these will result in grief, and they're handled in much the same way.
There is a lot of suffering in life. Do you believe that we need to go through the suffering in order to appreciate the good and the blessings?
Well, I've got two answers to that is. One is, when you're living in heaven and everything is just right, you're not going to change anything. So suffering is the spur to grow. When things are wrong is when you make the changes that will make you into a better person, right? And the second thing is denial, avoidance haven't solved any problem. No matter how hard you run, you take your pain with you. The only way is through it. Now, with physical pain, okay, you can have an operation to reduce the source or take painkillers or something, although they don't actually solve anything. With emotional pain, the only way is through. I've had clients who went on antidepressants when someone died, and then later on, some event triggered the pain as if the death had been yesterday. You've got to go through it.
Going through grief, depending on the type of event that took place, could lead someone to shock. And I came to learn through personal experiences that shock could last a few minutes, it could last a few weeks, or it could take longer, or people could remain in a state of shock for months. From your experience working as a nurse and a psychotherapist, what have you learned about human suffering? And do you have anything to comment on regarding a shock?
That's what tends to happen initially. And there are multiple ways of handling it. One is to just collapse in a heap, fall down a hole and pull it after you and wish you were dead. The opposite is to get super busy, super efficient, be there for everybody but yourself. And I've seen both of those. In fact, I've done both of those. Yeah.
When
And you
you
can
want.
flip from one to the other, you know?
True, and it is a process to find the consistent routine. When it comes to grieving, of course, losing one's loved one could, I don't think anything could triumph that. But when people struggle and they make progress, is it possible that they could regress years down the road?
It's a yo-yo. You go up and down all the time. In fact, it's the rule. It's never a straight line progression. And that's why Elizabeth Kübler-Ross's famous model, you know, five stages of grief, what she actually wrote was very flexible and very subtle and very wise. But popular culture turned it into a clockwork mechanism that's simply wrong. So I like not to refer to stages. A stage is something that you go through, you know, one after the other. And it's not like that at all. Another Elizabeth, Elizabeth Harper Neild, talks about seven choices. And each choice is backwards and forwards. And they can come in any order. But eventually, with luck, if you make the right choices, then you progress to eventual healing. But it's perfectly possible to make the wrong choices.
Sure, and I was going to get to that. Is there any wrong choice that we can make that will hurt us in the grieving process?
Too many. Well, Elizabeth Harper Neild talks about seven, and that's probably about right, but you know, I could probably dream up a few more. Well, one is avoidance. And even though you're living in hell, you get to the point of saying, yes, it happened. And you can progress up and down. And well, it's too complex a process to describe in a few words. But mind you, I mean, this book is pretty thin. It's not the number of words that counts, but their impact. And if I say so myself, I'm a pretty good storyteller.
You have written many stories and touching upon the book, The Hole in Your Life. How should one go about, should they go about filling that hole, or they should hold space to honor their loss?
You do ask very good questions. It's both. Look, when somebody you love dies, years down the track, anniversary of the death, their birthday, events like Christmas will tend to be days where you remember that person, and the tears may come, but also laugh. Look, my mother-in-law used to enjoy a game that my wife and I play over morning and evening meals, and it's an adult version of Chinese checkers. And she used to pick up a marble and wave it around and then forgot or pretend to forget which hole it came from. And so when we do something like that, we call it doing a mother, which gets a bit of a giggle. And the example I give in my book is I lost a sock. I took off my socks and one was around to put away and put in the wash or something. I couldn't find the other one. Found it the next morning in my pocket. That's doing a mother. All right? So the remembering is there, but without the pain. That's fully resolved grief.
When you mentioned that you have gone to the pity party and then making progress, when you went through your pity party, what did you do to feed that pity?
Well, I've got this problem that there are over 8 billion people out of steps with me, out of step with me. I'm different. So I tend not to do things like that. I will support others and join in, but I'm okay. I've written a short story. At one time I've offered it 3 times, an online positive psychology course, and I've written content that my students could then access online either before or after the session, depending. And basically, I had this desperate homeless fellow hold up my narrator at knife point, and he was 92 years old and, you know, pretty handicapped, and they became friends. And in fact, Mario, my narrator, had offered him the spare room in his house. But what happened was that on Christmas Day, Pat Murphy, the homeless man, came carrying this album and they went through each other's lives. And that helped Mario handle his grief for his recently died wife and Patty to handle his grief for having lost his family.
That is quite a transformation.
It works.
Revisiting the concept of grief, we covered the loss of losing something or someone. And there are also people, as a professional grandfather, young teenagers and young children, anyone that came from mid-1990s onward, that seek out your counsel. And some of them could become the object of a loss who may be struggling with surviving day to day. And you work with the extreme cases for giving them guidance on how to continue living. What are some of the challenges that teenagers face in today's age that did not exist while you were growing up?
Well, in the Western world, suicide is now the number one cause of young people's death. It's overtaken motor vehicle accident. And if I were a young person now, I'd be in despair, unless I had the tools that help me to stop jumping off the planet, and which I share with them as best I can. But typical contacts I get is, I've got this dreadful urge to kill everybody in my school. Well, maybe not that girl, but everybody else. And of course, some of them actually give in to these urges and do it. But the ones who seek me out don't want to do it. So that's the lever in. And with my help, many of them progress to becoming strong people, good people. Two or three have gone on to study social work so they can benefit other young people. As I said, giving back, you know, paying it forward. Then the other one is, when I was 12, I sexually played with a couple of little children, and now I want to kill myself. Should I go to the police first? That kind of. And again, if they feel guilty, they're not abusers. The real abusers are the ones who, you know, go and seek further victims. And so they can be very resistant to letting go of, I'm a criminal, feeling that way. But there is a nice young man who is now a doctor, and he lives somewhere in Eurasia. I won't say what country. And he sexually played with a little brother who, as far as I can tell, actually wasn't traumatized. But now the little brother is a teenager and is depressed. And this young man is beating himself up. He's depressed because I sexually abused him. And there's no evidence for that. But that's what I've got to lead him out of.
For the teenagers that struggle between life and death, what do you feel are the influences leading them to that point? Is it a weak family domestic environment? Is it too much mental sensory overstimulation in the world that we live in? Can it be possibly pharmaceuticals? Is there any top two reasons from your observation?
So certainly anything that affects the brain should be avoided. I did my drunkenness in a past life, so I don't do alcohol. About the only psychoactive substances I use are chocolate and coffee.
Well, thank you for sharing. I was going to ask your opinion about alcohol,
But
but you
yeah,
answered it.
if alcohol was uninvented, I would cheer. It does more harm than all the illegal drugs combined. But also, look, we're in the sixth extinction event of Earth. We're rapidly sliding toward extinction. And most young people are intelligent enough to know that. And they see the terrible effects of inequality. A few people, you could put them in a London double-decker bus that own almost everything. And the result is suffering by a great many people. And even if not personally suffering, young people who have empathy are bleeding inside because of. And well, teenage years are difficult enough anyway. I was incredibly depressed as a teenager. I knew no one could ever possibly love me, which goes back to my infancy. I sorted it out. I was severely depressed from at least 5 years of age. I had it under control by, without realizing it, doing therapy on myself by 23 years of age, and I got rid of it by 43 years of age. And that's what I share in my 18th book, From Depression to Contentment. You know, you can go from depression or anxiety or other forms of suffering up to normal, which is the walking wounded, or way up. And that's where positive psychology comes in. Positive psychology is not, you know, I'll wish for the lottery and I'll win $1 million. It is a well-researched set of techniques for improving your life, making yourself into a better person.
As we touched upon depression, you also write on nutrition and on educating people how dietary nutrition impacts our well-being and our mental health.
Well, I'm no expert on that, but I have something which I call the seven magic bullets. If you have a good dose of this in your life, one of my cliches is, I'm a pogo stick. The harder the world jumps on me, the higher I bounce. I've got lots of these cliches. And there is a, if you go to my blog, which is bobbing around, and if you do a search for, you might reproduce the URL in your link or next to it. But if you do a search for Dr. Bob Rich bobbing around, it comes up. And there I've got a link to my psychology website. And there I have an article on first aid measures. And the first one is nutritious. Well, no, the first is restful sleep, neither too much nor too little. They're ordered in difficulty of achieving it. Second one is a nutritious diet, neither too much nor too little. Then antidepressant exercise, which is exercise when you stop while it's still okay, while it's still fun. You know, it's not fitness exercise, but there you do it for fun. You might do it by going dancing. Third one is creativity, and you can do a creative activity in a hack fashion, or you can do something like cooking or weeding in the garden or gardening in a creative way. Then there is fun. And one of my prescriptions for when you're grieving is you must have fun as well. And my little book is full of humorous turns of phrase, little jokes, whatever. It's necessary. Then social connectedness. I mentioned my friends Mario and Paddy. That's what helped them. And the last one is the most difficult, but the most powerful, which is meaning. So part of my healing from my daughter's death is to put meaning to it by writing this book, getting it out there, helping to relieve the suffering of others.
From your life experiences to date, you've been blessed to see the blessings and the lesson. How would you sum up in one word the concept of the life cycle?
When people ask for one word, my answer is chocolate.
I'll take that.
I'm a dry chocoholic. No, well, I can't do it in one word, but I can do it in a sentence. And first, a preface, I don't believe in anything because I've got the handicap of a scientific training, but I go with the evidence. And based on the evidence available to me, the purpose of life is spiritual growth. So we're all apprentice Buddhas, apprentice Jesus. So anything that you do that gets you spiritual growth is good. Anything that goes backward is something to be corrected.
You are a great advocate of encouraging people to live a simple life. And if we are to live a simple life, does that help us alleviate the process of grieving? Does it make it a little bit easier? How does it work?
No, I don't think it's related to grieving. But in 1978, my wife and I decided to, we had to make changes over time, to live below the poverty level of our country. And for much of that, we managed it. At one time, my counseling psychology practice was too successful. I don't believe in turning people away or having waiting lists. So I was seeing 8 clients a day while the medical center I worked in was open, and then visited another one on the way home. So the money kept coming in and just gave more to charity. But we find that by living simply, we live like royalty. Quality of life, well, poverty is a prison if it's imposed, and it's liberation if it's chosen. But I don't think it has any effect on grief as such. You still can have losses.
Well, none of us are immune from the side effects of living, but I love the signature in your message because living a simpler life definitely does increase the quality of life. You don't want to become a prisoner of some of poor choices that we make, especially in today's age where there are too many choices and not all of them are meant for us. I do have a question out of your collage of books. What happened to the 20 books and 1/13th? What happened to the 1/13th?
Well, it's really 30 and a half plus 1/13. All right, the 1/13 is I submitted probably the best short story I've ever written to a new publisher, Palm Branch Publishing, who specialize in anthologies. They pulled together a variety of authors, and in this particular collection of 13 authors, I think six are award winners. And in fact, the collection has won an award. And so that's the 1/13. The half is that I've got a science fiction series of which four volumes are written, and the fifth one is part complete. And then there are 10 fully written books that either I never published or I withdrew for one reason or another. But there are 20 published books.
Your work also touches upon environmental campaigning, and I also believe that that can overlap with the concepts of the book that you have in the hole in your life, because people need to learn how to pay it forward to become a positive influence in society. What are you doing in your present life with the environmental campaigning?
Okay, in my country, Australia, well, my country is where the Global Greens movement started. Bob Brown started it, one of my heroes, marvelous fellow, even got a good name. In Australia, we have preferential voting, which means that if you have seven candidates in an election, you put number one to your first choice, and then the one that you most want to keep out goes as number seven. So that gives minor parties like the Australian Greens an opportunity. So there are two major parties, although one of them is thoroughly falling apart, thank heavens, but they're really clones of each other. There is, right-wing conservative and a little bit less right-wing, but still right-wing conservative, and that's the choice. And they're both in the pockets of big business. They're honest employees of the people who provide their funding. But you can protest against them by putting Greens first and then your choice of the dinosaur parties second. Yeah? So we do quite well. So I'm very active in the Greens. I'm the co-secretary of my local branch, and I run one of the working groups and things like that, And at election time, I'm out there knocking on doors and putting bits of paper in letter boxes, fully recycled paper with vegetable ink.
Wow.
And how to vote cards and talk to the media and stuff like that, Then also, like in America, Australia has a dreadful treatment of refugees. And so I'm in a refugee advocacy group that raises money for and well advocates for refugees. And there is a local volunteer organization. Mother Teresa says, help one person at a time and start with the person next to you. So what you do locally is important. This is a church cooperative, and I'm not a Christian, but I'm one of their volunteers. And what marvelous people. Well, when I have a few spare dollars, I'm liable to make a donation. Just today, there are islands between Australia and New Guinea, and the sea level is coming up, and they're losing their land. And they sued the Australian government for not taking sufficient action on climate change, and the court dismissed their actions, and they're appealing. And so I donated some money to fund their appeal. They're getting their legal representation for free, but these fellas have to travel to Canberra. They're two marvelous old men who are elders. And there is a little orphanage in Uganda that keeps 40 children alive, clothed, fed, educated. And I give a regular donation to them. And basically, what's a minimal, what would buy me a cup of coffee in Australia will feed them for a week because of the exchange rate. So if it was US dollars, it would be even better. And I would love it if more people supported this little group. There are many scams like that, but this is genuine.
That is good to hear from firsthand experience. It absolutely takes a community effort for everybody to reach their goals. And as we start to wrap things up, in your work, you also talk about compassion and kindness. What guidance can you give to people who struggle with being kind to themselves? Because if we're not kind with ourselves, how can we be kind to other people?
It's hard, especially as so many people have, you've suffered early childhood trauma. As a little kid, I just knew that I was stupid and ugly and hopeless and no one could possibly love me. And, well, on my blog, I have a little essay called The Onion and the Pearl. If something triggers, I make a mistake. Oh, idiot, because no matter how many achievements I put around me, that inner hurt is still there. But one day, I transform that onion into a pearl. There's this little animal in the shell, and a bit of grit gets in. It hurts. So it builds a little shiny coating around it, and it's coating after coating and coating. If the grit in the middle wasn't there, that beautiful pearl wouldn't be formed. So you can, as I said, at 43 years of age, I transform the onion into a pearl.
And that delivers a lot of hope to people because they should know this is not about age. Wherever you are in life, it is never late to make that decision. The whole point of living is self-improvement, self-development, and spiritual enlightenment. You're welcome to share with people where they could support your work. I know you have multiple websites, and they also have been shared on Sasha Talks.
Yes. Well, my blog is bobridge18.wordpress.com, or as I said, search for Dr. Bob Rich bobbing around, and the links to the other sites are there. And anybody buys any or sends me proof of purchase of any of my books, and I will give them the opportunity to get a second book for free, electronic copy. And the only thing is, if I send you a free book, you don't get another copy for that one. It's not an endless chain. And anybody who subscribes to my blog gets a free book. It can even be two different books. I mean, why would you want the same one twice?
And just for fun, I'll ask, is there any other profession that you plan on retiring from? Because you are living a blessed life, you have so much keeping you busy, and you're bringing good into the world.
Well, I still do editing for past clients, including a couple of publishers, but I'm not taking on new clients anymore. But the professional grandfather one, I'll retire from that when I die.
Is it okay if the audience calls you Papa? What do the children call you?
Well, everybody calls me Bob. My oldest grandson, who was born in 1993, we were having a conference phone call, and he was told to call me grandfather or granddad, and he kept everybody calling me Bob. So he invented the term Grand Bob.
Cute.
And my son, who's Rob, when he became a grandfather, he decided he'd be Grob.
Well, Dr. Bob, it's been a privilege talking to you. Thank you for educating us today. And it is a privilege being in your presence. We get to see each other today. I want to thank everyone in the audience to join us. All of his content will be available through Sasha Talks and his direct blog. Everyone, have a blessed week.